You're live on Purple Haze Radio. Cannabis Lifestyle Radio.
All right, so we're back at the CWCBE, kicking it. Everybody's going around, checking out all the great speakers and all the booths and all the different things with the industry. And we got so many great people that Jim McAlpine brought into New West Summit. Some really great guys that are making a difference in the industry. And we're super blessed today to have Eric from the band Revolution, a fucking band that I actually love a lot. And you guys have this great reggae twist and have such an impact for so many people around the country, and it's really exciting to see you guys interested in the cannabis industry and getting all into it. How you doing, bro?
I'm doing good. Yeah, thanks for having me.
And you just got to speak. How was that?
I don't feel like I'm the greatest speaker, you know, I'm more of a musician, but went better than I thought. So.
Yeah, that's cool, right? Is it a weird, different, like, stage fright if you're like musically like doing a song compared to doing an interview or like standing in front of a crowd of fucking people, right?
Totally. Well, it's funny because, you know, back in the day, I was like really scared to sing. I was just a guitar player before the singer.
Okay.
And then I kind of like mustered up the courage to like sing. And now I just feel more comfortable singing than talking. So I would way rather sing. Yeah.
When did you guys start as a band? What year was it?
2004.
Okay. So you guys have been rocking almost 15 years at this point. Did you ever think back then that weed would be legalized, or you think it was just like not even imaginable back then?
You know, we did. We were really proud of being cannabis advocates at the time, and still are. And we felt like we were part of this movement, you know, to legalize. I think our mission at this point is to just continue trying to get it legal, you know, in the entire country. You know, that's where we see things in the next, you know, 5-10 years.
And the band's, where are you guys from?
We're from different parts of California, but we all met in Santa Barbara.
All right, all met in Santa Barbara back in the day. And then you guys solidly tour. Like, you don't really take too much of a break, do you?
Not really. Every time we think we have a break, we're doing another show.
And how many albums you guys have throughout the years at this point?
We have 6 albums now.
And working on a new one, or?
Our latest one, Free Reign, just came out in June.
Oh, sweet. Pretty new and stuff. And you guys now touring and singing a lot of the newer songs and stuff off of that album, essentially.
Yeah, we always mix it up at our shows. We try to give everybody a little taste from every album.
Sure. And do you feel that your styles have changed a lot through the years, or do you think it's just kind of like organically just is built and built and built?
We never put out a song or an album to try to reach a certain demographic. We just put out music that we think sounds good, that music we enjoy writing and performing.
So
I do think that the music has kind of evolved. We're influenced by a lot of different music. It's not just reggae.
Sure.
It's a lot of stuff. So we're incorporating, you know, different genres of music into our albums.
Yeah, that's what I like. Like, you, when you hear your songs and stuff, it's a lot about the feeling, the lyrics. Is a lot of the lyrics based on your guys' life, or is it more of giving a message to people? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, I think it's probably both. I mean, we get to meet so many people while traveling. I mean, like I said, we used to do 150 plus shows a year.
Wow.
And now we're, you know, around 90 to 100,
sure,
which is still a lot. You know, we're on the road a lot, but we meet a lot of different people, have conversations that are incredible. We meet people with incredible stories. It's really inspiring to talk to people from each city that we go to. And it's not even just this country, you know. Sometimes we'll travel outside the country and play. Went to Tahiti last year. We played Costa Rica.
Cool. Costa Rica. Mm-hmm. Wow, that's fucking pretty fun, right?
It's super fun. It's fun going to a place where they don't speak English as their first language. And so
that's interesting.
When you can connect with the listener just through music.
I mean, the vibe.
Yeah. Music really is a universal
jamming
language. Yeah.
Absolutely. So you were doing guitar, then now singing. Are you considered the main singer of the band now at this point?
Yeah.
And when did that transition?
The first album that we came out with, we had another singer that did 4 songs, but I was on half that album singing, and then once he left the band, I took over for the next 5 albums.
Wow. And you guys are doing lots of tours with lots of different bands. Is there a couple of shout outs to some bands you just enjoy that they're good-hearted, fucking cool homies to like hang and tour with, or no?
Man, we get to tour with so many great artists. We're lucky, and we're an independent band, so we really get to choose like who we tour with.
That's great.
We like to bring in a lot of artists from Jamaica. So like,
nice.
You know, we toured with a guy named Protégé recently.
Okay, shout out.
Yeah, shout out to Protégé.
Shout out to Protégé. Who else?
And who else? Raging Fire. But, you know, I mean, the greatest part about touring is we pick bands that also have, like, what we think is a positive message, you know?
Absolutely.
We're in a position where we're speaking in front of a lot of people, or we have a microphone, we can reach a lot of people, we have a platform, you know?
Sure.
And I'm stoked to be part of this this cannabis conference because, you know, I think for the most part, people are out here trying to spread medicine, you know?
Absolutely, and, absolutely. And what do you think about it going legal and everything? I mean, do you positive feel about it or no, or how do you feel about it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's positive in regards to people being able to grow and consume and utilize cannabis for their own personal usage, right?
Sure.
I think people are a little bit afraid of the commercialized aspect of it, but you know, I mean, you have an option as someone that utilizes cannabis to support your local farmers, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Just like you go and you find like produce, you know.
For sure, farmers markets and things like that, or whatever. Yeah.
You know, I think, I just did an interview with, just did this conference with Burner, and he was saying, you know, I'm not afraid of any competition because that's just kind of how like the industry is moving. It's just with technology and you know, he's like, I bring on all the people that are trying to compete with me.
Sure.
And you know, I think like, just like I said, I think he would say the same thing, you know, try to support local.
Absolutely. It's great to do that. And so funny enough though, when you're traveling, and obviously we're quite lucky because Cali, you know, the weed is just always popping and all these fucking great strains and shit. How, when you're touring around and shit, now that there's a lot of states that are legal, what's the second favorite though? Is Colorado, Oregon?
Definitely Oregon. Oregon's where it's at.
Washington's slanging out some good bud though. It depends on what dispensaries you're going to, but you're thinking Oregon's killing the game, huh?
They are. They're definitely killing
flower
the game.
Or wax? What do you oil or what? Edible?
I like it all.
But if you had a favorite, though.
If I had a favorite.
If someone was like, yo, what do you want right now? You want some herb? You want to hit a wax?
Honestly.
You want an edible? What were the three would you pick?
Honestly, like some really clean oil. Not like a big fat dab or anything, but just like enough to get that flavor, you know, man, it's something pretty special.
Hell
but
yeah.
I think, you know, as a creative, as a singer, to get in that creative mode, you know, I'll probably roll up some flower, some sativa and a raw and just kind of enjoy it to myself and just make some music. That's
nice.
Probably my most ideal like situation.
So do you find that you're affected a lot by that? So if you took an indica, you might not be in the mood, let's say, to write?
Definitely,
now.
Yeah, definitely.
But if the concert was popping and everything was all done and it's like end of the night type thing, you rolling indica or what?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I really do find that it makes a difference. And you know, we have 2 products out with a company called Flav, and one is an indica, one is a sativa.
Oh,
and,
no shit. I didn't even know you guys had some stuff out.
Yeah, we do.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude. Yeah. Is it in the dispensaries in Cali, or what's
it
up?
It is. It is.
Is it just flower, or what is it?
No, it's they're cartridges. So
they're
oil cartridges.
Nice.
Yeah.
What flavors? What'd you do?
We did... I forget the actual names of the flavors right offhand. I don't know why I'm blanking.
Do you know what strains it was, or no?
I'm blanking on them.
That's cool.
But yeah.
I got you.
But, you know.
You guys search the web and look up what the fuck's going on.
Exactly.
Sure.
Exactly. Yeah.
You guys going to expand out on more shit or no?
I think so. I think you know, I actually really love some hemp lotion. You know, like when you're playing guitar for 100, you know, hour and a half each night, taking down that inflammation with like some CBD lotion or something like that. So I think we want to put out something like that. We're all about the medicinal side of cannabis.
Okay. So it's not just so much about the herb. I mean, like, would you do a pre-roll or do like something like that, flower in a jar type thing?
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. We're cannabis advocates. We've been that way for a long time, and the reason why we have two cartridges is because we feel like it's a great way to introduce cannabis to someone that hasn't really tried it before.
Okay.
So like I've got like a bunch of family members that grew up thinking that cannabis was this drug, right?
Oh yeah.
But
and
then
you're like this negative person just because you.
Yeah. Well, I think they like looked down upon me at first, you know, and now they're seeing like, oh, it's kind of being a little bit more normalized, at
Absolutely.
Least here in California.
Oh,
and you know,
for sure.
They've tried a couple of the Revolution oil cartridges and they're like, oh wow, like this is really helping me, you know,
no
with stress.
Shit.
Or like,
no
you know,
shit.
Whatever the condition might be, but like,
now how fly is that?
Yeah, it's
getting
funny
the family
to see.
Members to all of a sudden transition.
It's great, yeah.
And now you're going to be kicking it, hitting your cartridge with fucking grandma or mom or whatever. That's fucking wild, bro. You know, I love it. I think when I first like started, like, you know, my boy Tilo, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Tilo, come on around, jump on. Tilo actually has on our network one of the most popular shows over at Dash Radio. And it's Mayhem and Token, and he's always killing it.
All
and
right.
One of our main members over here at Purple Haze Radio. So do you ever jam with homeboy? Do you guys actually
That's
fuck
a good
around
word,
here?
My man. Tilo.
Hey, Eric, I feel like I met you before.
Yeah, no,
man.
We met each other a few times.
Yeah,
I'm sure we have.
Yeah, Tilo was in the band Methods of Mayhem back in the day with Tommy Lee and Steve Perkins.
Oh, nice.
That
we definitely met before.
Yeah, you jamming, dude. I was like, that's pretty nice. He got right into it. So people started walking out. He's like, bling, bling, bling. They were like, oh, hold on. Let me sit back down
real
quick.
I actually love that song,
dope.
Too. It's always a good feeling fucking staple of songs, man. When I was first, you know, listening to you guys and shit, it was very inspirational because I'm always been about.
No, he's actually really your fan. This dude's like, he's truly a
sure.
fan. Like, straight, like,
he knows good music.
Which is cool. Hell yeah.
Some people say it, man. It's the real deal, though.
Nah, definitely. It is, man. Because I always, you know, I like the reggae rock feel.
Yeah.
There's always something, especially if you're a stoner.
Well, for us, we just want to mix it up. You know, I think a lot of our listeners don't necessarily listen to strictly reggae. And
sure.
A lot of the times, you know, Revolution gets them into the genre, but we like to mix it up. I mean, we come from a wide variety of backgrounds. You know, I grew up in a house that was playing a lot of world music, so a lot of people come to me like, hey, you know, your voice kind of sounds like it's got a little Middle Eastern, like, you know, vibe to it, and they're totally right. You know, like a lot of the stuff I was listening to was put on by my parents, and it kind of translated into the music just subconsciously because that's what I was listening to as a kid.
Oh, really?
But then, you know, you have the other guys in the band that add their two cents. You know, our drummer comes from a total rock background, progressive rock, so he's not like a traditional reggae drummer or anything like that, but we really embrace that because we feel like it sets us apart from like the rest of the pack.
Yeah,
you
have
a distinct
like change up that you hear.
And the other thing, you know, none of us are actually like superb musicians or anything like that. You don't have to be like an incredible, you know, technical player to put out a vibe or put out a message or put out something that people enjoy. So you never know like what the right combo might be to just get, you know, like a creative song out there, you know. So that's why I always encourage people to play music, because it's like what I'm doing is like, you know, I don't feel like what I'm doing is like revolutionary, and just, you know, I don't feel like I'm this insane guitar player or vocalist, but you know, you put enough time into something and enough creativity, you know, it can really just get to the people that are listening, you know?
No, that's 100% real, man. But the minute you started playing, cause I was like, oh, dude, it was real crisp and real clean, and it sounded really good in that room, surprisingly.
Right on.
And it was like, I was super stoked about it.
Yeah,
and I was like,
well, the thing about
it,
playing acoustic is like, if you mess up a note, everyone's going to hear it.
Yeah.
But if I'm with like a full band, you know, it's like my full, nobody will know. Everyone's just kind of going crazy, right?
It was amazing, man.
Yeah.
I'm about to embark on a acoustic fundraising tour. 100% of it's going to different charitable organizations. One is the Innocence Project, which is dedicated to helping minimize prison sentences for you know, something as stupid as, you know, cannabis offense.
Do you know Scott Budnick from that did the movies, like the Hangover movies and stuff? He has a recidivism, I think that's what it is, like kind of program he does.
Oh, cool.
Same thing as like getting, you know, cast that went that because they were scared. They were 18 years old, got in trouble, and they were like, you're going to get, you know, 15 years, and they ended up just signing for 6 years, and they really should have got probation or a slap on the hand.
Oh, that's terrible.
It's so many times
I mean,
it happens.
I know that stuff's out there. I mean, obviously, we have a whole prison issue in this country that's just mind-blowing, but can I plug my tour? Is that okay?
No, plug. That's right. I got you on here. Plug fucking away,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah, so, I mean, if you go
100%.
To... 100%. If you go to Eric Rachmani Music...
That's why I got you on here. Plug away.
EricRachmaniMusic.com.
Absolutely.
We're doing 4 shows on the East Coast, Philadelphia, New York, Boston, and D.C. The New York show is sold out, but the other 3 are still tickets available. And then the 4 West Coast shows are already sold out. There might be a couple tickets left.
Where are the shows at in the West Coast?
Santa Ana.
I was going to say, one's clear what, at the conservatory?
Yeah, no, I'm not sure actually where it is. I forget. But
anywhere in the L.A. area?
Yeah, we're doing the Troubadour in Hollywood.
Nice.
Santa Ana.
And it's sold out, right?
Yeah, they
don't
sold
worry,
out.
Dog. Tilo wiggling, dude.
Okay, okay.
So anyway, thank you. Thank you so much. I know, I know you're a busy cat. Yeah. Got a great
schedule.
For having
thank
me. You so
thanks,
much,
man.
Brother.
Much love, bro.
Shout out.
All
good
right,
luck
family.
On the tour. Great blessings, brother. And
hey,
thank you so
lot,
much
man.
For what you do for the industry.
Right on.
You're live on Purple Haze Radio. Cannabis Lifestyle Radio.
All right, so we're back. CWCBE. Roaming around, checking out all different things. And it's always exciting, all these different people that I get to interview in the industry. But this gentleman here, I have to bestow the ultimate honor and blessing that I'm so happy you're with, that I'm with here, Frenchie Cannoli, one of the kings of hash making. And not with him today, but where's your beautiful wife?
She is supposed to, she's supposed to come by. I'm not sure if she will make it today.
Tim Mila, and we call her the queen of hash. Essentially.
No, you're mixing up. My wife is not Mila.
I'm sorry. What was your wife's name?
Kimberly.
Oh, Kimberly. Okay.
No, she's the brain behind.
I got you. So, Frenchie, you're a master of, I mean, you talk in so many different shows and educate so many people, and you have your own hash making classes, essentially, right?
Yeah, workshop.
Let's talk about it. How long have you been in the industry?
In the industry, truly, maybe 7 years.
7 years. And is your main method of making hash the old school bubble hash, or no? Is that are you?
I mean, I've been in the industry 7 years. I've been making hash for over 40 years.
40 years.
But I never been part of the legalization movement.
Okay.
That's what I mean by
yeah,
that.
Sure,
like
sure.
I never really fight for it. I went into producing country to not feel like a bloody criminal.
Yeah, of
you
course.
Know, that's it.
Of course.
I didn't believe that it would happen in my lifetime.
And now look at how open you are. You would never think openly. You'd be like, oh, I'm teaching you how to make hash.
And I owe that to people who actually fight the fight.
Sure. Like, shout out to rest in peace, Jack. Jack Herrera, who had such a wonderful impact.
Denis Perron, all that group of people that really fought for 215.
Sure.
That brought back, more than legalizing, they brought back the knowledge of our medicinal
that plant
is. That's
what's important, is the knowledge of the
That's
medicine.
That's huge.
It's huge.
Because
it's
we had
gigantic.
Forgotten.
And always been into the love of hash, or what?
Because that's the first things I smoked. My best friend when I was a kid, teenager, smoking were Lebanese, Moroccan, Persian.
Sure, sure.
And
now the old school hash, let's talk about that. Okay, what they used to do is they would just take the full buds, essentially, right? And then pressure, like smash it, or
no,
explain?
No,
explain.
No. It's like it's sieving. But instead, they would, the whole harvest is dedicated to the resin production. There is no smoking the flower.
Sure, sure.
And it's pretty interesting to see that traditional knowledge had the ability to realize that the whole potency of the plant is not in a flower,
sure,
but in a resin head.
In the resin
when
head.
When they couldn't even see it.
Sure. No, that's very interesting.
I mean,
absolutely.
The people who invented the game of ash,
yeah,
to be able to to know where the power is coming from.
Sure.
Being able to keep it in sure. good condition when it's something that is so fine.
Now let me ask you something. Can you do bubble hash or extraction hash with a fresh plant? It always has to be dry, right?
No. You can do it with live plant. It's like in India, like traditionally you have hashish producing country and live resin producing country, charas producing country.
Okay, so charas is the live resin. Oh, really? Really? I didn't
know
that.
What else? You collect it on a living standing plant.
Sure.
How much more live do you want?
I got you. But I always thought that it had to be dry. It had to dry to extract or pull or
no,
whatever.
No, it's like when you have the live plant, you have a peak of terpene profile.
Okay. Oh, when, the peak of terpene profile.
When you
sure.
when you dry that plant, you're gonna lose 80% of the terpene.
80%.
And that's in the best condition.
Wow, that's a flavor.
But the isomer of the terpenes that stay bound in a certain way that it creates a different terpene profile.
Okay.
So that a cured flower doesn't smell and taste like just a dried flower
okay.
or a live plant.
Interesting.
And what is the best? It's hard to say. The Pinot Noir from Aficionado, when it's cured, it's like smoking chocolate. When it's live,
okay.
it's like a field of flower without the perfume and a strong hint of lavender into it. That is beautiful, but it's not chocolate. So
now,
if you
there,
ask me
sure, sure,
what
sure.
I like best,
sure,
in that case,
sure.
would be cured.
It, sure.
It's like it's too peak
I understand.
Of quality that the plant is offering.
Is there a difference in the THC content when you're doing live over dry?
No.
Like the percentage of how strong it is, you know what I'm
no.
saying?
No, no. It should be basically the same. The
really?
Amount of terpene that changes totally the experience
sure, sure.
is radically different.
What
that's what changed.
What about the hash weight? Would you get the same amount of weight processing it live than you would dry?
Actually more, technically speaking.
More live?
Yeah.
Because, wow.
Because when you cut tot, bring to the drying room, hang for drying.
Uh-huh.
Everybody and his brother is going to touch to see if it's dry.
Sure.
Then you unrack it, and then it goes to the trimming. You know how much you lose?
Sure.
A lot.
Sure.
And the best.
So now, would you freeze the live plant before making the bubble? Or no?
I mean, technically speaking, when you freeze a plant that is made of 80% of water,
uh-huh.
that water is going to become 10% more of a mass when it becomes ice.
Okay.
That means that you literally explode at the cellular level your plant.
You're exploding it.
So as long as it's frozen inside the plant, you're in clean territory. There is no bleeding of the of the chlorophyll and everything.
Uh-huh, uh-huh, interesting.
As soon as it starts melting inside, it green. And you cannot avoid it and you cannot clean it.
Oh, interesting.
When you do live plant directly from the plant to the machine, the plant is going to bleed a little bit. The scar is fresh.
Sure.
And so every time you wash it, it's going to bleed a tiny bit.
Sure.
But you can clean it up.
Now,
but
you're a water hash maker, essentially, right? Is that your...
Now, yes, because I
now,
consider
yes.
water as
okay.
the only evolution in sieving cannabis resin since the game was invented.
Sure.
There is evolution in the tool. There has never been an evolution in the methodology itself.
Now, let's, because I know you know the answers to these specific things for those that don't know. What temperature does the ice get to before the molecules really start popping off the plant into the water, right? When you're making the bubble hash?
It's not that. It's like the temperature has nothing to do with the dislodgement of the resin head from the stock.
Really?
Yes.
I thought, so why is it such a big deal to fill it with ice and beat it and do all that? Because I always thought the coldness is the main thing.
No, it's like resin is sticky.
Okay, resin is sticky.
So if you want to collect it from the plant and you don't want it to stick to the plant or stick together and being able to be separated through perforation on the tool, you need to work in cold condition.
Okay.
In producing country, you dry sieve in a winter, in a cold environment, when it's dry, cold in the shade. You don't sieve in a full sun at noon in the middle of the summer.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
But when you want to press, you use the opposite. Okay, so
okay.
The ice is just a mean to be able to have your medium, which is the water,
sure.
to be
extract.
Cold enough.
Okay.
It's not an extraction.
But it doesn't have to be ice cold. It just has to be cold.
It has to be in the 30s, mid-30s.
Okay,
mid-30s. But it's like
okay,
it,
sure.
it, you don't need to reach a certain level of temperature
okay.
to be able
okay.
to make it work.
Okay.
A resin head is made like a fruit.
Sure.
There is an abscission at the bottom of that resin head,
uh-huh.
and at maturity, it's made to fall like a fruit or a leaf.
Okay.
Okay? So what makes the resin edge break away from the stock is the current of the water.
Wow, that's interesting.
When the water is cold, the resin is not going to stick to the material, to the trim, or together, so that you can separate it after on your sieve, in your
now,
bag.
What are you a four screen, six? Like how many, what do you do? Like
I do full spectrum.
You do three screens or how many?
I do three screens.
Three screens, and what sizes?
190, 160, 45. 45
wow,
is
that's
my,
a big jump. So
because I don't want a slice of what the plant is offering me. I want everything together.
Okay, so
when you have a 73, it's not going to be the same than your 90 or your 120
no,
or your 45.
Not. No, it's not.
And, but, I want all that together.
But are you doing the 190 for food grade?
The 190 is my catch bag. I don't do a work bag.
Nothing with it. So when you do the 190, do you just toss that?
Yeah, it's only green.
It's only green.
Yeah.
So you're really actually just taking out of two screens. Mm-hmm. Which, what were the other two sizes?
160.
Yeah,
but
160.
My 160, you are in those size perforation where contaminant and resin head are basically the same size. So
okay.
you cannot separate
okay.
them through the perforation per size. The higher up you go, then you reach that stage. The lower down you go, the same. The
sure.
resin head are the same times of the contaminant and you cannot really separate anymore.
Now, you can't... You can't melt, 190 won't melt, right? Just the 45s
when won't. When the resin is great, when 190 could melt, but 190 is given only by plants that makes really big resin
eggs. Like a hash plant
that,
or something like that.
In that,
that
case, I would need to use a 220.
Oh,
so
wow.
I use a 220 to catch the,
Sif, yeah.
the material.
Sure.
If I have something in my 190, I keep my 220. If there is nothing in my 190, I take the 220 out.
Sure.
My 190 become my catch bag.
Wow. And the 45, is that just is beautiful,
45
huh?
to 160 is my
yeah, and the 45
ash.
Is nice and light, right? Or comes out lighter usually or no?
The 45 to 160 is... The coloring is depending on the strain.
Oh, okay. So that is makes that, it, so that's a misnomer then. The lower bags isn't going to be the lighter color, right? Or it just is lighter anyway, just by habit, or no?
The color has nothing to do to a certain level with maturity, except...
But some people use it as a gauge. Oh, it's blonde hash. That's more money or this. Like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, they have these weird things of saying why one is better than another.
Where is the science behind?
Well, that's what I'm asking you. Is it
there
science?
There is none.
You're answering my question.
There is none.
It's marketing, then.
There is plant that makes really dark resin, but dark amber coloring is not a degraded resin head.
Sure.
If you talk to some scientists like Samantha Miller, for example, she made study where at 80% of amberness in every resin head, there is no degradation of the cannabinoid.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So that there is a huge fork of ripeness between milky white and the darker shade of amber.
Oh.
And depending on the strain, there is some strains that never become amber.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
and there
of
is some strains
sure.
that become sure. milky at sure. 3 weeks
sure. Sure.
when the plant is 8 weeks. So
oh,
you
okay.
cannot really,
okay.
you cannot base your defining ripeness cannot be done by the size
okay.
or by the color.
Wow. But so many people are told, oh, wait till the trichomes
yeah,
turn
yeah,
a reddish color and this, and then that's what they think is the only way to know it's done. What you're saying is that's not true.
No.
Wow.
It may be true for that specific, it may be true for that specific farmer, that specific genetic in that specific environment.
Sure.
But if you put another genetic, same farmer, same environment, it's not going to give the same color.
Sure.
Then when you take genetic from greenhouse or indoor versus outdoor, in outdoor it's going to be more in the amber color than when you work in indoor.
Sure, sure.
And like I say, I've seen plants regenerated.
Let's say it's the same genetic, right? You put it outside, put it inside, okay? Feed them similarly. Is the hash quality going to be different from one to the other?
Yes, because the resin is going to be very different from one to the other.
Is the natural suncrete resin that would be stronger or no?
Yes, because the plant is more powerful. You have to understand that the plant controls everything around it.
Okay.
Okay. All those terpenes are made to control their environment, but
sure.
it works only underground. That means that every microbial life that breaks down the nutrient from the plant is called and orchestrated by the plant. The same than in the air, it can kill other plants.
Wow.
It can attract insects to kill insects that bother them.
Get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
Really?
I mean,
wow.
It, like, resin head, it's a glandular trichome. The oldest we have found is 300 million years old.
What?
Okay.
And what?
Today, science, we know how terpenes are formed, but we don't know what the plant kingdom is really doing
sure,
with
sure,
those
sure,
glandular
sure.
trichomes that produce
absolutely.
200,000 plus compounds.
200,000 plus
compounds.
Wow.
That are not part
wow.
of the metabolism of the plant, that are secondary metabolic, that are made to, I mean, it's like, think about it. The plant came on the planet 700 million years before us.
What?
Okay.
And how do you even date that?
That's source that you can find.
Okay,
A plant that was just an alga conquered the world by using every mobile living organism to do everything they wanted. You think human being is not a pollinator like a bee? We think we are. But it's like, it's a living organism that is aware and bloody intelligent.
Wow.
Okay? That is creating the very oxygen we breathe.
Wow.
And we're trying to do better and we fuck with it. It's like we should try to understand it. And cannabis may well be the Rosetta Stone to be able to understand the language of the plant.
Wow.
And be part of a wholeness.
So you're traveling all over, right? I see you all over the place, in LA and this, and different states, and Canada and this, and I mean, it's crazy. You, when's your next classes? Like, what do you got going on?
Sunday, actually, this coming Sunday, I have one in Oakland, where actually I can show my 30-gallon stainless steel 21st century cutting-edge badass machine next to a little 5-gallon machine that you can buy for $50.
So what you did is you created, instead of having the bubble bags, an actual machine that'll process the screens?
No. What you don't understand, I do not extract. I sieve. I ice water sieve. And water gave me the evolution of the game is not only you don't work with a brittle material, so you cannot create contaminant.
Okay.
Contaminant and cleanliness of the resin, it's what define quality when you dry sieve.
Wow.
Okay? Or when you do charas for that matter.
Sure.
With water, you rehydrate the material. You don't have a problem of contaminant anymore. But further than that, when you sieve, you have your sieving tool, your sieving place, and the material over it that you agitate.
Okay.
So the resin head break away from their stock, and at the same time, you separate per size on your material, because sieving it's to separate per size.
Sure,
okay?
sure.
When I use water, I can agitate in my washer and I sieve in my bag. That means that
you do the old school hooking up to a washing machine or
now? Two processes that were inseparable, like you couldn't separate in one methodology. Now I have two separate processes that I can fine tune.
Wow. That's awesome.
When you dry sieve all your life, already to get into a way where you are beyond cleanliness to find quality, to be able to fine tune those two processes to that level. And when this happened, I created a washer.
Essentially.
Essentially, I needed a powerful vortex to do my agitation.
Absolutely.
And my bags, I still use bags, but they're full mesh, and that's where I sieve.
So
I agitate in the mesh.
So first agitate and mix it, put all the butter in it, let it and then as it pours out the water, you actually then, like you said, hold the thing. Now, so if you're holding a higher mesh one first, right, you're pouring it through.
Every bag is on the frame.
So you have them and it goes through the whole thing. Oh, nice. Hell yeah.
And there is a space in between so that the flow of the water going through the bag is already doing a first separation.
Do you have a Instagram or anywhere that people could check out what this is a little bit or not?
I have actually all my workshop in the smallest detail done by professional for free on my YouTube channel.
Okay, so if people want to check out YouTube, give a shout out. How do they check it out? What do they search on YouTube?
Frenchie Cannoli YouTube. I'm not sure the detail.
On YouTube, check it out and check out all the different cool things that he's done.
You really have the workshop in detail.
And one of the things that we do have in common is Frenchie gets to judge this wonderful competition called the Squash Off by Rosentech. And we actually had, shout out to Rosentech, we had them in the office, did an interview, and they actually left us one of their Rosentech smashes. But Purple Haze Properties, our group, was the one that did the very first Squash Off and got the first place for the candy rack for our foxy lady. So I was happy that you were one of the judges, and I definitely felt blessed. That was a good competition. You got Skittles, all the different like famous guys
that was a good one, right?
And the banana, Golden State banana, was pretty good too. There was like a bunch of ones
surprisingly good.
Really surprisingly good.
And I like that competition because it's live.
Absolutely.
And it's judged on the flour, the squish itself, and then smoking the resin.
And then smoking it. So and that competition had a six-way tie, right? We had to do a second day tiebreaker.
Yeah, no, but because they give us, we were supposed to have 6 entries and we smoked 22.
Yeah, it's 22. It's like, How fucking cool is that?
We just finished the
hookah. You needed a break.
You can't judge it. We needed to smoke a second time.
Absolutely.
At least 6 of the samples to be able to
do it well. And shout out to that. All right, cool, man. Well, thank you so much, Frenchy, for coming on. It was such a pleasure to hear what you got going on. And anybody who's interested, check out Frenchy's YouTube channel. You can see him on LinkedIn, Facebook, right?
Facebook a little.
Mainly,
if you want really to see the porn, it's on IG.
Yeah, you got some hash porn. You got the best hash porn that I know, for sure. And if somebody wanted to reach out to you, what's the best way?
DM me.
Okay.
Or you go on my website and frenchycannoli.com and you got the email, you email me.
All right. So if you guys have any questions, definitely hit up the king of hash, in my opinion.
No, truly, do not hesitate. I'm supposed to be a teacher. So it's like if I don't answer, it's because I missed you, especially on my IG.
Yeah, for sure.
DM, I answer all my DM. Email, you are in and you are into the file system. Everything on my phone can be lost. Every email, it goes through my wife. Everything is locked down.
She gets it and makes sure. So.
She's a business
That's absolutely the way to do it. So, man, talking about all this hash, I think we need to get out of here, take a little break, and smoke some.
Hell
yeah. All right, Frenchy. Thank you, brother.
Nice talking to you.
You're live on Purple.